What's going on, everyone? Welcome to another episode of Conspiracy or Just a Coincidence. I am Jack Allen. So, everybody, if you haven't noticed, I've been kicked off of Twitter. Not sure really why. So I got to change my whole intro up. It's don't follow me at Conspiracy or JC on Twitter. I'm on Instagram now. I had an Instagram, but never used it. I think I got kicked off because of who I followed. I followed I follow everybody. I follow like people crazy on the left and like Reupers and things like that because I'm interested in what people have to say. And I was just using it last night and out of nowhere, I got the boot. So, you know, I was like kind of upset to be honest because like I don't like tweet anything crazy really. I like am pretty like, you know, I don't tweet anything that's like bad or with misinformation that they don't want you talking about. Like I try to stay away from certain topics because of that, like self-censorship, and they still got me. So, you know, it is what it is, dude. What am I going to do? I put an appeal in and I'm sure that won't do anything, but I'm on Instagram. So I'm learning how to use Instagram again. It's been like 5 years since I used it. It's like so different. There's so much stuff. And, Evil Knievel says it's Bob's fault. Bob probably set me up, dude. He probably freaking set me up. Bob's Lessons. I'm just joking. Anybody listen, go follow Bob's Lessons because Bob is a great friend, dude. He like tweeted out my account and, but I'm sure you're following him anyway, but if you're not, go follow Bobo. He's still on Twitter at Bob's Lessons and on Instagram. But, you know, what else is there to say, right guys? Like, it's like sad because you put all this effort into it and I like built this account up. You know, I started with no followers and, you know, I learned so much along the way. I met so many great people and luckily a lot of you guys have Instagram and you reached out to me there. And I'm so happy that we were able to do that because it sucks. It really sucks, but it is what it is, right? That's not going to stop me from searching for the truth. I've been in real jail. Twitter jail will be nothing. And, you know, maybe one day, maybe I'll get my appeal. Maybe I'll get back on. Probably not. But if I do, great. If I don't, we'll build it up again on Instagram. And just because they shut me off somewhere doesn't mean I'm going to stop learning, seeking for the truth. I love doing the podcast so much. It's like my hobby. And I've met so many awesome people. So that's all I'll say about that. So follow me on Instagram. Follow me on YouTube. Follow me on Odyssey. Odyssey is an awesome platform. And you can like subscribe to my website, conspiracyorjustacoincidence.com. And if you want to reach me, my email is conspiracyorjac@protonmail.com. And I'm pretty good at responding to those most times. So last episode, we started working on Program to Kill, which is a David McGowan book. Go listen to that episode because it like really sets up everything that we're going to talk about. But basically, like my super quick Cliff Notes version is these the CIA and intelligence apparatuses used psychological warfare all in Vietnam, Korea, all these places, and then they brought it home and used it on American people. And it was unknowing, as we know, MK Ultra, that all this stuff they did, and this led to the creation. The CIA has been behind these massive operations of cults, serial killers. All these people have exact same stories, whether it's being a child of a troubled family, institutionalized for a very large portion of their lives, abused, all this stuff like that. And another huge point, again, you just got to listen to it because now I don't have my notes up for it, so I can't just like go offhand, but like basically human trafficking, all this stuff like that. It's the CIA is involved in drugs. So one would assume you could make that connection with other things they're involved in, right? So I don't want to say too much because I'm don't want to push my luck. But so today we're going to start with part two and then we're going to do part three. So part three will be, we're going to go over all of like the big name killers, which I know so little about. I'm not like one of those crime history guys, but that's what we're going to do. We're going to kind of talk about today. So we're going to talk about with a guy, start with Henry Lee Lucas. And Henry is a crazy story, but there was one quote from David Berkowitz, who was son of Sam Killer. His quote was, "There are other sons out there. God help the world." And there's a really scary thing is a lot of people who are not in prison, a lot of people who are not in prison who are far more successful than I. And that was by Ted Bundy. So that is scary, dude. That is very scary. But yeah, so June 30th, 1998, Henry Lee Lucas was one of the most prolific serial killers. He's scheduled for execution in the state of Texas. This story is crazy, crazy. I think I just talked about it on another show. So who's the governor? George Bush. And things are not looking good for Henry. He was George Bush. You know, this is Texas, right? You know, Texas, it is not a state where they are easy, especially in 1998 on crime. It's a conservative red state, you know, not there's not second chances at all. And this guy was convicted of horrible stuff. George had not granted clemency to any man his entire time as governor. He carried out more executions than any governor in the history of Texas. And Lucas's crimes were brutal, like brutal, you know, everything you can imagine, necrophilia, cannibalism, all this horrible. It said that he had 300 to 600 victims. Now, these numbers are totally fabricated or like juiced up. And we'll get to that in a second. Lucas worked with this guy, Otis Toole, who was also had similar proclivities, self-described arsonist and cannibalist. He also murdered dozens of victims. But 12 days before Henry Lucas's execution, George Bush got a huge heart. He said he made a special request that the Texas State of Board, all Bush appointees, review Lucas's case. And 8 days later, shockingly, he issued a recommendation that no execution takes place. Ryan, what's up, dude? And I was sorry to break, but Ryan and I were talking about, he was like, man, don't be so negative that you're going to get kicked off YouTube. And so I was wrong, but I'm going to remain positive, Ryan. That's why I don't want to get too involved in my sob story. So I will remain positive. Thanks for checking in, dude. All right. So Bush, he says, review the case, guys. He's murdered 300 people. Let's review this. And the board even said, well, there's a chance he's innocent of his crime. So out of nowhere, Henry is pardoned, and this is where Henry starts rubber stamping every single unsolved murder. Great grandmother who was killed by her abusive husband, it was Lucas. Just every story, literally, if the Texas Rangers couldn't solve a case, they brought it to Henry Lucas, they solved their damn case. So right there, okay, like something's fishy with this guy. He's the only guy that gets clemency, and he's the most brutal like serial killer in Texas. And I'm sure W didn't care about, you know, the claims of that he might have been innocent. He was convicted of no fewer than 11, and the one death sentence that he got, the governor had no problem setting aside. So so let's say it's luck. Lucas got lucky. George W had a heart that day. But let's just see how lucky this guy's life has, or unlucky that this guy's life has been. In 1970, he was released early from a sentence, serving a first murder conviction. He was supposed to get 20 to 40 years. He did 10. And he explained the parole board. The parole board asked him, if we release you, like, will you be okay? And he says, if you release me now, I will kill again. So, and this is not the only person. Manson does it. Lots of other of these guys do it. Say, if you release me, I'm going to go back. I'm going to go back to my ways. And what do you know? It wasn't long before Henry gets arrested again after he was released early, attempting to abduct a young girl. He gets released again early in 75. And for nearly 8 years, him and his buddy Otis Toole commit untold amount of murders. Untold, right? He gets arrested in 82. Released and was not arrested again till 83. And Henry was taken around the country after this arrest, confessing to, like I said, 600 murders in 26 states, clearing all troublesome unsolved murders. He provided this valuable service to the Texas Rangers, taking the rap for unsolved murders. And so we're going to get more into this story because that's clear, like alarm bells when I'm reading this are like going off in my head. You know, I'm making these connections like, dude, this, what is going on here? Like, I've been in this prison system. There is no way this is a normal way of things at all, especially at this time of the world. Now, in a blue city, you probably get like seven for, you know, you get a significant less sentence. So Henry, he was indoctrinated into a nationwide cult, trained by the cult in paramilitary training in the Everglades, which is another common factor we're going to see, Florida, Texas, and California. He was instructed in abduction, arson, as well as killing close up and personal. He even was so good, he served as an instructor. And he was a contract killer for a while, abductor of children, and he would deliver these kids to a ranch in Juarez, which is the drug capital, one of them, of Mexico. It's like a border town that has a lot of violence, if you didn't know. Tons of violence ran by the cartels because that's a key location to getting drugs into the United States. Now, this ranch in Juarez was used in production of pornography, ritual sacrifice, all this crazy stuff. And he claimed that what appeared to be the random work of a serial killer was actually, the media would say, oh, these are random crimes committed, but they're much more, they're committed crimes for a specific purpose. Even like political hits, foreign dignitaries, businessmen, and Henry, he loved the work, which provides, that makes any work easy. If you love what you do, you're not really working, right? So it was actually Otis, his accomplice, who recruited Henry and started training him. And Tool, by the mainstream media, is labeled as a severely mentally handicapped and like a junior partner, like a tag along, a sidekick. And that's how the media portrays this guy. They say he's dumb, all those things like that. And he was for sure not any of that. He had substantial knowledge about the practices of Satanism. He was raised as the devil's child. That's, I'm air quoting if you're just listening, by his grandmother who lived with Otis and raised him. His childhood had lots of abuse, incest with family members, father's friends, sister, all this stuff. His grandmother was actually, and his grandmother was his mom, and his dad was her son, and that was his dad. So it was just this totally messed up family. It's a multi-generational, not God-fearing people. I guess that's the best way to put it while we're on these crazy websites. They would eat, dog, like all these animals fight to death, digging up bones in graveyards, doing ceremonies with them and stuff like that. And he would hear voices. His sister committed suicide and children were placed in the care of Otis and Henry, the other kids that she had. The two of the kids traveled with them, participated, witnessed all these horrible things. So clearly not going to be doing too well. So going to have a big issue psychologically at some point in their life, as a child obviously should not be seeing that. So the one ends up in a field after years of abuse by the pair. Another one ends up in the psych ward, another for prison for arson. And so this is a pattern between serial killers and their parents. Their moms or dads are super abusive physically, mentally, always psychologically. One time Otis's mom and his grandmom beat him into a coma. He lost an eye. And the key thing that always happens is his mom was also a prostitute. Which again, we're going to see Manson. I mean, every single one, literally every single one was like this story. Customers in front of Henry forced to watch. Another key thing, these kids, they get forced to dress up as little girls. Like if they're boys, they are forced to dress up and be raised or like try to pass off them as female, which makes you wonder, because I don't know if you guys ever seen that photo of Bill Gates as a little kid and he's wearing like a skirt. He's at like a parade or something. And I'm sure many of you know the photo, but it makes you wonder, like, why would they dress him up like that? Like that wasn't the fashion, right? Like, so is there something deeper here with this? They would sell Henry out to John's as a girl. Otis Tool, his accomplice, also forced to dress as a girl growing up. And Henry had other strange stories. He was a close friend of Jim Jones of the People's Temple. On numerous occasions, he was taken on a chartered plane to Guyana, where delivering the cyanide that Jones allegedly used in the infamous massacre. And this was his quote. They think I'm stupid, but before this is all over, everyone will know who's really stupid. And then we'll see who the real criminals are. You know, like, it's just so funny how powerful the mainstream media is at manipulating. And we all have, like, my dad, he listens to my episodes. I'm sure you guys know. And I did a Manson episode a long time ago, and his immediate reaction, Manson, was he was a total psychopath, just a crazy guy, which is true. He is a total psychopath. But if they want you to think that these guys are stupid, but also smart at the same time, to remain not caught and leave no forensics. So Navy psychologist claims, like, Office of Naval Intelligence had taken convicted murderers from military prisons. So they would use prisoners in military prisons, use behavior modification techniques, and would relocate them in American embassies around the world. I'm sure no issues came across that. That probably was because they were getting a second chance, and they were super good secretaries at taking notes. That's what I see in that. Dr. Narut, this is a guy that was speaking out a little bit because he thought it was all going to come in the open. He said that the U.S. was creating large numbers of assassins to kill on demand. And it was convicted murderers serving military prison sentences. Because as you guys know, military prisons, like, we have no idea what goes on in a military. I literally have zero clue. Maybe you do, but you don't. You at least have a little more ability to see what's going on, like some transparency in regular prisons. And Narut actually made all this stuff public because he thought it was all about to break, come in like the Rockefeller and the Church Committee. And so, which was where we found about MK Ultra. But you think, so he thinks all this is about to break. And he's like, well, I got to get ahead of this shitstorm. And he doesn't. They were pretty upset with him. They were doing this whole Manchurian candidate thing for real. Like, for real, civilian prisons was next. It didn't stop at the military. And this was like in 1975. Next month, Henry Lee Lucas was released from prison to begin his 8-year-long reign of terror. Weirdly, during his 10-year stay, he spent 4.5 years when he was prisoned for that first murder, 4.5 in a psych ward. Drugs, electroshock therapy. He called it the nightmare that would not end. And now, how many times have we heard this story? We talked about Alan Dulles doing this stuff. The CIA doing in hot mental hospitals all around the world. People will go in these psych wards for simple things like depression, postpartum depression, not simple, but you understand what I'm saying. And they would be subjected to literal torture with electroshock therapy, deprivation chambers for days, kept asleep in forced comas for months on end, literally torturing these people psychologically. And, this is what Henry Lee Lucas spent 4.5 years in one of these psych wards. So God only knows what he was put through in there. We have no idea. Is it possible that Henry was recruited? So more time back. I don't know what my note says here, you know. So is it possible that Henry was like recruited? So there's this cult, the Hand of Death cult. And is it possible the Hand of Death cult was probably kind of created by the CIA? So was he possibly recruited for that? And I wrote my note, the CIA would never recruit killers. So I think I was trying to be funny in my notes, but yeah. So the CIA has recruited killers constantly. So that was what my joke was saying. Like, oh, the CIA would never recruit a killer to be like an informant and to be an asset. Well, that's totally not true because they brought in war criminals from the Third Reich. Gehlen, we did an episode on how him and Dulles were buddy buddies. He was this huge Mengele, Eichmann. I talked about Eichmann in that Alan Dulles show. These guys committed atrocities to people, torturing them for science and just for pleasure. And CIA had no problem bringing them over. So to think that they would stop there. Lucky Luciano, Meyer Lansky, mob figures, huge mob bosses, tons of murders, also recruited by U.S. intelligence. They propped up dictators. I told you to talk about Guatemala all the time. 250,000 out of a 3 or 4 million population they were behind because they propped up a vicious dictator to take over because they were trying to nationalize the fruit industry there. I say nationalize, there's more to that. Well, that doesn't matter. There's this guy, Dan Mitrione. He's a CIA torture aficionado. He's a boyhood friend of Jim Jones. He would kidnap homeless people to take them to soundproof underground chambers in South America. And Sinatra and Lewis even flew into his hometown, performed a benefit show for his widow. And this guy was like, you know, hailed as a hero, but really he was doing horrible things in South America. The Phoenix program in Vietnam, Navy SEALs would work with people like deserters, Viet Cong turncoats, people that were so bad that the Vietnamese couldn't deal with in prison, and they would take them. The Phoenix program would take them and be subjected to the same type of psychological treatment that these Henry Lee Lucas would have. And they would taught the secrets of psychological warfare. These guys were so vicious in the these prisoners of the Viet Cong they were released, they would devour enemies organs. Like, these guys were deranged, and we took them in with open arms. So this was I found this super interesting. So Jonestown Massacre was not just a mass suicide, as the press says. Only a handful of the 913 victims died by suicide. The rest were summarily executed. Lethal injection, some by strangulation, some shot in the head. And that is not the story that I was told or immediately. When you think of Jonestown, you think everybody drank cyanide. They kept going up in line or getting their cup, and they would just die. They all died that way. Not true at all. A handful of them died that way. Henry Lee Lucas was at Jonestown at the time of murder, according to him, doing more than just delivering the cyanide that killed them. It itself, Jonestown, was an MK Ultra project, complete with a vast stockpile of drugs, sensor deprivation tanks, equipment, maybe not tanks. They were like zombie-like assassins. They gunned down that Congressman Leo Ryan before the massacre, so that's why they had to clean up they killed the congressman. This is just a prod, the Jonestown people think, how did this happen? How did all these people follow this guy? Sure, he's charismatic, all these things like that. Well, because he has resources. Where is he getting these resources from to buy all this land in South America, these huge quantities of drugs, these huge quantities of weapons, all this stuff? How do you think he funds that? You think he's that charismatic and the people joining are super wealthy people? No. I would never join and just move to South America with some guy who, rules with extreme authority. Not saying that I'm super wealthy by any means, but I'm saying if you have a job, that's definitely not what you're going to do. Most people that join cults are lost, probably not really employed that much, but yet Jonestown had unlimited resources. How do you think that happened? It was because he was funded by somebody. And this is the same thing with the Manson family, the Zodiac killers. They're never what they appear. The media has never told the truth. Why would they tell the truth now? They're not random acts of violence that you need to be afraid of that are going to happen to you, but they're contracts carried out for a specific purpose. And David Berkowitz, the son of Sam, he was one of several gunmen, a patsy who took the fall to protect the rest of the people involved in these murders. And that was the same with all of these serial killers. The DA, Santucci, in 79, he reopened the case and concluded that Berkowitz did not act alone. Sketches were at a huge divergence from one another, had numerous phone numbers of doctors, lawyers, businesses, bizmen scrawled on the walls of his apartment, Scientologists. Also, this was crazy. Son of Sam, David Berkowitz, had the Montauk Golf and Racquet Club phone number scrawled on his wall. Did he love playing golf? Was he possibly a great racquetball player? Possibly. Most likely, though, this was an exclusive country club, so he was very good at golf. But what's next to the Montauk Golf and Racquet Club? It's next to a closed military base. Maybe you guys have heard about that. The Montauk Project did experiments with mind control, time travel, the Philadelphia experiment, which is kind of like conspiracy candy, but they said that basically the ship they were able to, it's Stranger Things, one show that I've watched a season of, is loosely based on the Montauk Project. They were playing around with acts to like portals and things like that. And that was where Son of Sam Berkowitz is. He had the phone number of the country club that's right next to the base, right next to the base. Just, you know, again, it could be a conspiracy or it could just be a coincidence, right? In 94, this guy, and this just wasn't in America. That's where I'm going here next. There's this guy, Pietro Pacciani. He committed 14 killings. And the real mastermind behind his killings, according to police, were high society non-Christians. That's a good way to avoid, you know what that means. There was weird rituals led by this distinguished doctor. And did you guys see that doctor in Italy that was tricking women into having sexual relations with them because saying that he would give you the vaccine? Italy doctors, dude, crazy. How does someone get away with that in 2021? I mean, he got caught eventually, but who would believe that? Like, Italy is not a third world country. They're not like superstitious. How did this doctor just do that? Anyway, okay, so these rituals were led by a distinguished doctor. The Pacciani trial was retried, and of course, Pacciani, at his retrial, he dies due to a heart attack. How did he die? Was it totally random? Well, actually, someone gave him prescribed medicine that killed him. I'm sure that was totally by luck. They didn't want, he had high blood pressure, and they were just trying to take care of that. He was also dragged by his feet after the death, as anyone who dies of a heart attack normally is. And his close friend, who was also involved with this, who was speaking out, was found hanging in a stable with his feet still resting on the ground. Difficult to hang yourself when your feet are still touching the ground. His daughter, who was 3, and the mom also were found dead in a burnt car. And so a lot of these unchristian events are done with, I told you about the organs in remote farmhouses, remote look like the ranch in Juarez that we're going to dive into more deeply. Artists who Pacciani worked for as a gardener whose home had incriminating evidence. He disappears days before the trial. He's hiding out in Belgium, which we had a story last episode, the monster of the Belgian beast or something like that, who was a guy that had all these convictions, soundproof rooms, all this stuff. They promote the guys that prosecuted it correctly, which meant letting it go. And they got rid of the people that wanted to do good things. But so this guy, the Pacciani, he's called tagged the Monster of Florence. He was bankrolled by upper echelon. He had 2 houses, over $75,000 in cash when they arrested him. So a gardener, that's what he did. Can't normally afford 2 houses and have $75,000 in cash lying around, from my experience. Maybe people have different experiences, but I'm pretty sure no, they can't afford that. The judge of the case received death threats. This happened, and this, again, I talked about Belgium last episode. Algier, another story like Pacciani, over 30 killings. One of France's most civilized cities, cover up was happening between senior officials and the exploitation of young women, just like the trial that's going on right now. Claims some of the murders were ordered by most prominent citizens, witnesses, and blackmail, and just all these guys were police officers, the mayor, news camera guy. Cameras were everywhere during these events, these orgies with underage children. The prosecutors of the case stopped the investigation into the corrupt politicians in Paris. And this is so normal, right? The Reuters headline for this huge case had evaporated. The guy reneged on his confession, Algier. The prostitutes that came forward to say all these politicians and policemen are involved in France doing this, they admit they lied. They get jailed for perjury. A story that we've heard before and again, like the Franklin scandal, where the victims that come forward to speak out end up recanting their story, or they get charged with perjury and get imprisoned longer than the people partaking in this abuse. Is that not insane? Insane. So the two people, these two girls, they were jailed. It's just so sad, dude. Like the Franklin scandal, the one girl who stepped forward, whose story never changed. You know, the one guy, Paul Bonacci, his story, you know, I won't get in it, you know, I still believe him, but the girl, she never changed her story. She got like 10 years for perjury, longer than the guy, Larry King, who was behind the Franklin scandal, got. He didn't even get that long. She got longer for coming out. But back to Otis Toole and Henry Lee Lucas. So we said Henry, he was got clemency by W in Texas. Well, Toole, he's in Florida. Florida's going to get him, right? Red state. You know, they love their guns. They love Second Amendment. But something funny happens for Otis, for Henry's accomplice, Otis Toole. Henry, his sentence was commuted. And again, Florida is pretty overzealous in the use of the death penalty, but they aren't for a monster. Wait, that doesn't make much sense. Also note, both Henry and Toole. Now, if you're thinking about this time frame, Florida and Texas, who's running Florida and Texas? So you got W in Texas and you got Jeb as the governor of Florida. The Bushes, the Bush brothers, the Bash brothers, both removed the death penalty for two vicious serial killers in times when we were not shy of using the death penalty and they were in two red states. Does that make sense to you? Does that make sense? No, it doesn't make any sense because the Bush family is so corrupt. They are disgusting. Every single member of that family has literally sold out American lives to benefit themselves. And that's another episode, but they are just truly evil people. Jeb did like this deal with, you remember like Obama phones? Well, he did a deal. It was like kind of before the Obama phones. He got it passed to like give low socioeconomic people government phones. And he got that deal crossed because he had ties with this Mexican cell phone producer who got the government contract. I'm sure he never got any kickbacks involved in that at all. So there's this guy called the Railroad Killer. And this is where all these serial killers link up. They all link up. Rafael Resendez Ramirez. And in 1999, he walks across a bridge from Juarez to El Paso and turns himself in. He's wanted for 9 killings. Pretty odd to do. You kill all these people, like, okay, maybe his conscience got the best of him. But weirdly, he's taken into custody. He was taken into custody several weeks prior by U.S. Border Patrol, only to be released, despite being wanted by the FBI on a, you know, American FBI's most wanted list. Between this detainment and surrender, so before he was arrested before, let go, then walked before, during that time period, he claimed 4 more victims. So the FBI, the Border Patrol, and whoever was involved in that releasing him, 4 more people died under the blood is on their hands. He left the country with no death penalty, Mexico, which I didn't know. That was kind of interesting. To go to the death penalty capital of the Western world to turn himself in. Why? Right? He was adamant about surrendering to a Texas Ranger, requested no attorney, cooperated with detectives. And now this story gets so insane. So hold on to your hats, my listeners, my friends that sticking with me. Ramirez was born in Matamoros, Mexico, raised outside the family by non-family members, which is important. And at some point, I started hearing funny voices, like a person, but no one's calling me. Anything that can put down Christianity, anything that can put down freedom, that's what I do. And no one wants to believe this. So these are huge quotes, right? Anything that can put down Christianity. No one wants to believe the cult story. The TV people cut it out. The writers don't write about it. Henry Lee Lucas. And this is how it goes full circle. So Henry told about how he had ties to occult ranches just south of the U.S. border. Surprisingly, there is such a cult ran in Matamoros, Mexico, the same place where the railroad killer Ramirez grew up and raised. There was 15 victims of non-Christian type events, closely paralleled his stories with Lucas's stories. Henry's spiritual advisor gave an attorney a map that Lucas had drawn for her in 85, identifying locations where murder and kidnapping and drug running was conducted. And this interconnected operations along the Texas-Mexico border. And the Matamoros cult was one of these locations on Henry Lee Lucas's map. So if Henry is deranged and psychotic, he draws a map that just happens to be correct. The exact location where where Ramirez grows up. And the interesting thing about the Matamoros cult was that it was largely Americans that made up the cult. The leader was this guy, Adolfo Constanzo. The high priestess was an honor student at Texas College. Her grandfather was one that owned the ranch. And Costanzo was a ruthless leader of this cult. He was a genius. He had this messianic ability to command loyalty and blind obedience, which I can see that happening. Like people, when you find a leader, right? Like probably the reason why for following Groypers on Twitter, why I got kicked off, and I'm not calling them a cult by any sense. And even like Owen Benjamin, he yells at his listeners. Like when they're on the chat, he like calls them stupid and he'll block them and stuff like that. And sometimes people are annoying, but people are so afraid to stand up. So I see how that dynamic can happen over time for people that are lost and they join this group. But this Costanzo guy, Adolfo, funny, interesting name, but it was just, he had that power. He had, you know, drug dealing, terror, torture, a lot like Charlie Manson, but zero coverage on this guy. He was born to a Cuban immigrant who was a underage prostitute, blessed by this high priest at 6 and declared he would be the chosen one of this cult. Until 10, he's trained by non-Christian in San Juan and Haiti, learning black magic. I don't know, whatever you want to call it. In all these different places, he goes back to Miami in 72. He's mentored by another non-Christian priest and the art of grave robbing, the same thing that Henry Lee Lucas and Otis Toole's family taught them. And they would go in these graves, they dig up the bones and use them for certain events. It's just, and I'm saying these things because it's important for people. We can't, like normal people like you, we can, but normal people, normies, they can't grasp this concept because that is such a foreign thought to them, right? And it's a foreign thought to me too. I mean, I obviously am not digging in graves in my spare time, but so it's just funny. These same patterns happen over and over again. So his mother is arrested 30 times for prostitution charges. Charges never stick. Interesting. She's also a witch. Authorities find her living in a vacant apartment smeared with blood, feces, and urine covered all over her. Another thing that we keep this use of these things in events and abuse. So they find her covered. And so Adolfo, they don't remove him from her care or anything like that. They take her in. And so Adolfo moves to Mexico City in 84, and he serves as this like psychic to the stars. He lived in a beautiful, lavished house located directly across from an elementary school, which I'm sure was on purpose. Like there was famous celebrities. The mistress of the president of Mexico followed him. Another head of Mexican branch of Interpol. And this guy, the Mexican branch of Interpol, considered himself to be Costanzo's godson. He killed himself in Mexico after killing his wife. All three are killed in the same burst of gunfire. So that doesn't make sense. He killed two people and himself with the same burst of gunfire. Like, how do you do that? But the Matamoros cult was exposed in 89. Police found drugs, occult paraphernalia, all this stuff on the ranch, the same one where Ramirez was trained. Hopefully you guys are sticking with me on all these names. So you have the Matamoros cult, which Ramirez, the railroad killer, grew up on, was trained on. Henry Lee Lucas identified this cult before this broke the the news about what was going on there. And then you had this Adolfo Costanzo, who was the leader of this cult. So the police find all this stuff. They raid the ranch, probably because it got two people, and regular people were like, people are going missing. Things are happening here. Like, you need to help us. So they were forced their hand. So after they find this stuff, they let it go for 4 weeks. Then they return. They arrest four members of a famous cartel family, the Hernandez drug family. And 2 days later, first bodies are starting to be exhumed, beheading, grotesquely disfigured, internal organs taken, and they were in cauldrons in the farmhouses of the ranch. Spines taken, made as necklaces, people boiled, all these horrible things. Some of the victims, though, it was not random as they like you to think these serial killings are. One was an owner of a cocaine processing lab. They found out he was an informant for the Federales. His mistress was also killed. Three former police officers that probably weren't doing what they were told. Nephew of a U.S. customs agent that probably was on the take but couldn't get something done. A federal judicial police agent in charge of narcotics investigations. They killed seven in a drug trafficking family in a mass slaughter because they thought they were going to rat to the police on the complicity of the police in the drug trade. Again, like, they want you to think serial killers are just ran as a fear. They love to scare us. They love it. And not that that doesn't happen. Random people get hurt all the time, I'm sure. But they want you to think that, like, there's this like MO, the way serial killers operate, and that they pick a certain type of person and they only go after that type of person, like brown haired girl, young, whatever it may be. And that is never the case. Never. They just highlight those cases. Because most times they can't even identify the body or find the body to know what the person looks like. So Mexican authorities, they formally charge four cultists with murder, kidnapping, drug trafficking. 2 days later, Federales come again, or they've just uncovered all this evidence. What happens? They burn down the death shed at the ranch, destroying all the valuable evidence. They were probably very excited. They had fire. They were cheering. Woo, we got him. We got him. And he said, oh no. And he dropped his stick and it lit the whole place on fire. Costanzo and his followers, they run into hiding. Police supposedly find his hideout. You know, even though they've been on the take for so long, they find his hideout. And there's thousands of rounds fired back and forth in a 45-minute gunfight. Crazy. Crazy. And then shockingly, none of the cultists were shot and one officer was wounded. So horrible aim, or their steel walls wherever they were hiding. And supposedly Costanzo and his lover were executed in a closet by the priest that was with them, the non-Christian priest. And three survivors were captured and charged. Reports came in immediately that Adolfo faked his death. The two bodies that were killed, that found, that they said were Adolfo and his lover, you couldn't tell because they used automatic weapon fire to kill, to get rid of them, dispose of them. And they couldn't identify who they were. So his body was flown out immediately to the U.S., claimed by his mother, and cremated within days. Whenever somebody in news stories quickly cremates, like JFK, or I don't know if JFK, or whenever they don't do a good examination, you know something's weird, because the government, have you been to the DMV? It goes slow. There is nothing the government does quickly. That is not their MO. They move slow. They move slow. And so they moved in days. They cremated this guy that they found. The investigation grows as details come out. Infants were involved in these events. They were bred for that purpose. 87 to 89, 74 unsolved ritual homicides in Mexico City. 14 were infants. All these high priestess displayed signs of split personality. They would be married like on Halloween Day. And like this one that we're specifically talking about was to the Hernandez drug family. And that split personality we talked about last episode, you guys all know MK Ultra, but that is how they do it. It is, you create two personalities or three or four, and the other one doesn't know that this personality even exists in their brain. They go through hours of the day once like activated, that they black out. And that's what, why kids, why they like the, they focus their attention on these institutionalized kids from prostitutes and from abuse, because these kids, to, in order to protect themselves as they're young, they create, they wall off that personality that's experienced these horrible, horrible things. And they can bring that back out. They're easier to create this. And the example I used last episode, go listen to it if you didn't, but is like autopilot. When you're like driving home from work and you pull in your driveway and you're like, wow, I'm home. I know, I literally couldn't tell you one thing that happened on that drive. I know I did it. And that's what all these killers say. Like they blacked out during the, they don't really remember it. They know they did it because people tell them they did it. And they vaguely maybe like remember going to this location, but beyond that, they don't. And that's super important. So these people in these cults, oftentimes the higher ups have these split personalities. And like I said, drug trafficking, yo, We Live, great movie. Or maybe you're, someone said great, We Live. And I don't know if he's talking about the movie or me, but anyway, back to what we were saying. So, so the split personality high priestess, she married into the Hernandez drug trafficking cult, which was, or network, which was huge. And drugs always flow to Chicago, which is an odd location if you think about it, because it is the middle of the country, but a weird place to drop off. And we're going to get to that like next episode, but there's a reason behind that. So anyway, they had this Hernandez drug trafficking family that has ties to this, this Satan worshiping cult that Henry Lee Lucas is involved in, all this stuff. They're ties to top Chicago mob bosses. And what do you know, Adolfo Costanzo, who was cremated before they could ever examine the body, there starts being sightings of him in Chicago after his death. Authorities say, no, that's impossible. Because they know it's possible, because it's probably him, but they don't want him talking about all the stuff that he knows. Another excavation was began at a ranch near Juarez, another excavation. And again, located precisely on the serial killer Henry Lee Lucas's map that he claimed that this call was called the Hand of Death. And he said where they maintained a ranch. So he identified two ranches on his map that cults were existed at. Again, I'm sure just blind luck. He's a crazed person and he's just drawing pictures. Early reports found 100 to 300 bodies in mass graves, 22 missing US citizens, a number of former FBI and DEA informants in this pile of a mass grave. The US authorities, after learning from the Matamos case, because you know they're looking bad because Americans are being killed, they say, all right, Mexico, we're going to take over here. We're going to run this show. And this was a total like invasion of Mexican sovereignty. So was it be, and it was condemned by the Mexican press. Was it because they cared? Do they care about all these people in the mass grave? Did they? No, probably not. They probably needed to do that to make sure the right information came out. Bodies were transferred to US for forensic exam because I'm sure it's because they care. All the evidence was secretly moved to the US. Media coverage stopped after being assured nothing to see here, folks. Oh, no, just a drug war. No, it was not a cult or a mass killing. No, that's a conspiracy theory. And victims had been detained by men in police uniforms. So how, like the people that they, that's what their story was. How, so are the police kidnapping these people? Maybe, or it's people that have access to police uniforms because the police are giving or are condoning this activity. Not all, obviously. No investigation between the bodies exhumed or the missing persons case and the unsolved murders of hundreds of young women in the Juarez area. Brutally abused, tortured, all this stuff is just horrible. So because now this is so huge as well. So globalism is behind all this stuff. It's not just greed. Greed is definitely why global, you know, let's ship out jobs overseas. But globalism, there's a deeper reason behind that. And I think you can make this connection why when you have a global reach, you have global networks that you can do things in places that you could have more clout, more power. So NAFTA was signed. And it turned Juarez into essentially a slave labor location. Mexican officials in the 60s, you know, America's killing it. We're doing really well in the 50s and 60s. Mexico is not seeing the same type of economic boom. So the Mexican officials say, please, American corporations, build your factories on our side of the border. We won't tax you, zero regulation. And we're trying, obviously they're thinking they want to do this to build up the economy of Juarez. At least that's what they're telling their residents. They're probably being paid off to do this. And as globalists always do, they go, if they can increase their profits by 50 cents per unit and employ people that will work 30 hours, you know, whatever, 15 hours a day at a third or a fourth of the price of an American, they do it. They do it. Globalism is literally the worst thing. It's disgusting. Oh, God. But anyway, before long, tons of factories are popping up in Juarez. 500 factory employing over 200,000 workers. 80% of the factories in Juarez, American owned. And as population is growing because of these factories, because you're getting more and more people that are in very sad situations coming to get just to survive. No investment in infrastructure, no taxation. Taxation was literally voluntary for these American corporations that were building in Juarez. Most of the companies probably just paid somebody off to not have to pay taxes in Mexico. These factories, they're called maquiladoras, and 70% of the workforce is women, just trying to support families, probably in some village. These neighborhoods are essentially shanty towns. We've all seen that Amazon photo, that dystopian, beautiful Amazon fulfillment center and the shanty huts outside of it. It's in Mexico. There's no roads at this time in Juarez, no utilities, no public service, no street names. Drug lords rule the town. And murder happens in broad daylight still to this day. Death squads working for the drug lords make tons of money. They run everything. They run everything. And it is against this backdrop that most of these murders, like I said, they found 300 people in a mass grave have been committed in this town at this time. So many more now. Most of the victims had been these maquiladora workers. If late for a shift or, hey, you got to come in and we're covering this person's shift. You need to be here in 10 minutes. They don't get there. The factories would lock the doors for safety. Well, so now these poor women are left on the street. Also these factories in Juarez, when they would hire these women, what would they do? They would, you know, we all have ID photo. Well, most people get ID photos at work. Have you ever had a full body ID photo, multiple photos of you in an outfit from all different angles for your safety, for your ID photo? No. Well, that's what they would do in these factories. Why would they do that? Well, then this factory, who is the manager there, has buddy-buddy with these cults and drug traffickers who are hand-in-hand, as we've just talked about, and they would have essentially an album or a catalog of women that, which are then given to whoever, and the victims are selected. Then they make the call. You need to come in. They lock the door. They're alone. No one's on the street. That's ran by drug lords. And you can put two and two together. The first Juarez victim of 93, the lead suspect was this guy, Abdel Latif Sharif Sharif, who you wouldn't think would be in Juarez with that kind of name. He was born in Egypt. Sharif, like so many, was sexually abused as a child by his own relatives. He immigrated. He lived in New Hope, PA, which is actually pretty close to me. And by 81, he was in Florida. He's working as a chemist and engineer. He rapes a 23-year-old woman, gets probation. He beats her and rapes her, gets probation. And again, that was in 81. So no, not crazy long ago. Doesn't make any sense. He does it again a few months later, you know, because why not? He serves 45 days. That's almost the amount of time that I had to serve for my crimes, like one of them, for his second rape. Next year, he gets married. He's changing his path. He's going down. Sharif is going around a new life. He beats his bride unconscious. She divorces. He beats and rapes another victim. While awaiting sentencing, he escapes. He's recaptured. Sentenced to 12 years. 6 years later, he gets paroled. Pretty, pretty short time for somebody who's committed like four rapes and violent, and not even a citizen. He's set to be deported in 81 and 80, like four or whatever, but he's allowed to stay. Why? If anything, this is in 80s where we don't have these like progressive media people, you know, were much more reasonable, I'd say. Why do you allow someone like this to stay? Because somebody has a reason for him. He found work. He's got a job. He gets released. He doesn't get deported. He finds work in Texas at a place called Benchmark Research and Technology. He's even photographed shaking hands with Senator Phil Graham. And he's praised like in a little catalog by the U.S. Department of Energy, like as a picture, like, look how great this guy, like, look at our workers. They're so happy. And so he, in 91, he gets arrested on a drunk driving charge. No repercussions for that offense. And I can tell you from personal experience, there are repercussions for drunk driving. Don't do it. I wasn't drunk though, but you know my past. Anyway, 93, he rapes another woman after kidnapping her. Texas said, listen, Sharif, we like you. We didn't deport you. We let you kind of, you know, do some things. Just leave. Just leave the country. We won't press charges. Again, why would someone do that? Why? For a reason. So he does. He leaves the country. He moves to Juarez. Why not? And he went to work for the Mexico branch of the same company. And then in 95, he gets charged with rape by Mexican authorities, given a 30-year sentence, but bodies of the young women continue to pile up. Next arrested were a gang of nightclub workers, and they were being paid by Sharif to continue the killings. The gang claimed that the police tortured and coerced their confessions. Then another gang arrested, supposedly collaborating with Sharif, 15 murders, but yet again, coercion, torture. And these two gangs' arrest did not slow the disappearance of the killings, along with Ramirez's arrest, which was in 99. They just keep piling up. So many killers. So true, Jonathan. Jonathan says, so many killers have connections to political figures. Yes. That's this whole point is that. So Sharif, this guy, the Egypt guy, all the rapes, blah, blah, you guys, you're staying with me. You're with me here. You guys are smart. The killings are still happening and he's locked away. Ramirez, the guy who we started talking about like 20 minutes ago, the railroad killer who was ties with Henry Lee Lucas. He's arrested. Killings are still piling up. There's eight bodies, 300 yards from headquarters of the Maculadoras, the factories. So if these serial killers that are causing all this thing are locked away, why is the event still happening? Why are the women that are working these factories still being kidnapped? How? Oh, and then so they say he's ordering from inside the jail cell. He's paying them to do it. For what? They have no money. How does he have all this money? Doesn't make any sense. So these more bodies happen after all these people are imprisoned and they get confessions from two bus drivers through torture. The police had searched the vans that supposedly were used to abduct the women. No evidence. So they planted the evidence. The lead cop of this case refused to do this. He said, guys, why are we planting evidence on these two innocent guys? And he quit. He said the police are in on the murders. He got death threats. A federal attorney in Mexico City said these juniors are what they're called, the sons of wealthy, powerful Mexican families, were connected all to the killings. And then he gets transferred, now refuses to speak about the case. Case gets moved to another guy, probably threatened. And this other guy who's the case took this case of all these continuing missing people, his daughter and her husband was gunned down by AK-47. Basically, the killers have zero fear of being caught at all. There's even ties to the president administration at this time. Attorney representing one of the bus drivers that they tried to frame with these killings was chased, followed, pursued by police in unmarked vehicles, chasing off the road, and they eventually killed him. So what the point is that I'm making with this is that these killings keep happening. They pin it on serial killers that, you know, they're just doing this. And then they still continue when they locked away the same, like the same kind of operation, the same people going missing, these workers in this case. So what does that mean? What does that mean? How is that happening? So are these killings the serial killers, or is it a larger group that's behind this? And obviously, you know the answer. It's a larger group. They just use these guys as patsies. In 2002, PBS airs a documentary about all these missing women. And the interesting thing, the victims were missing long periods before their death. Ample evidence of like ritualistic things, remains found are often mismatched bones. Also bones that were like already bones far before it would happen to a normal corpse or a skeleton. And they would show up in areas that were just searched. So they got a big pile of bones somewhere, clearly, and they're just putting them, however, to like end the case or to stop searching or to have evidence. And then, of course, the Juarez police deliberately destroyed evidence. More than 1,000 pounds of the clothing and other evidence was burned, because that's going to have, they're going to use the smoke signal to find out who's stealing all these innocent women. One female witness was arrested, then abused in prison. She was shown photos of a woman being gang abused, doused in gasoline, burned alive. They were doing that to intimidate her, obviously. Jonathan says, serial killers have CIA ties. Yes, my man. That is correct. Okay. And then, So I said they showed that video. Some are kept alive during this torture. They put signatures, like carvings on them, like occult symbolism. And from The Guardian, which is like a liberal rag, but they had a quote about this case in the 2002, or this happenings. Patterns of mutilation that had not been released that could indicate narco-satanic rituals. So all these marks that these hundreds of women were having on their bodies, the bodies that were found, they all matched. They weren't released to the public. And these were different. So clearly, what is that showing? That's showing that it's a similar group that's doing this same thing to all these people. Reuters said that the motives were satanic rituals, organ trafficking, snuff movies. Same with The Guardian, said the same thing. The federal police in Mexico arrested cartel members who said they were involved of mass murder of 13 police officers. Officers are detained for complicity. And this just is not on the southern side of the border. This was happening also near Johnson City, Texas. Ironically, the birthplace of Lyndon LBJ. So I wonder if his like family must, like, what the, you know, was that just a coincidence that LBJ is from Johnson City, Texas, and his last name is Johnson? Maybe, but I just, but I also found that interesting because he was involved himself in, you know, he was helped JFK get assassinated. So there was this ranch in Johnson City, Texas. It's ran by German immigrants holding 75 human slaves, many acquired as children. And this is in 1985. We're not talking about some backwater town in the 30s or 40s. This is in 1985. 75 humans kidnapped, enslaved on a ranch. There's the property is patrolled by armed guards. They kept these people in chains, tortured with cattle prods. Bodies would burned. If they accidentally killed one of them, they would burn the bodies. Jonathan asks, is SRA consistent across most of the globe? It's definitely like on, I think, this side of the hemisphere, I think. And I think also, yeah, I would say yes, like Vietnam, all these examples happen all over. So the bodies were burned on this ranch in Johnson City. Texas Rangers, who, you know, have been dealing with a lot of serial killers, eventually raided the property after ignoring all previous reports for 2 years and then it took another 2 years for them to bring the case to trial. 15 years and 14 years for the leaders. Another son was acquitted and walked away a free man. So 75 slaves got people 15 and 14 years. Now that's kind of weird, right? Media did its part. You guys are
blowing this situation way out of proportion. Police have identified that maybe these people were there by choice. They liked wearing the chains, and nothing below whatever is happening at this location. To my next story, police save a cat out of a tree. That's literally just like the media. They think we're stupid. Why inflation is good? Inflation is good for the economy. They literally think we're idiots. And back then, people were even more gullible than we are today.
Weirdly enough, this ranch with 75 human enslaved, what was it located to? Oh, wow. It's located next to a military base. Also, court transcript said they catered to powerful Lido's files. You guys got it. You got him. You're picking up what I'm putting down. The property was a camp. This property was also, in olden days, a camp for Japanese internment people during World War II and deprogramming center for Korean War veterans who were the first to be brainwashed, supposedly. See, they use like these locations, dude. They are created. These people aren't just wealthy people that buy a ranch and say, hey, you know what I think we should do? I think we should kidnap people, probably as young, and start a slave labor force. What do you think? All right, we got a few, little bit more to go. So I hope you guys are enjoying it and we're staying with me. So this serial killer, I hope you guys understood all that. I tried to do it as best to understand. So the serial killer title is a totally new phenomenon. It was coined by the FBI and profiling, you know, how we got to call in the psychological profiler and to help understand the phenomenon. This was all recent. And as anything the FBI does, are they honest? Are they forthcoming? Are they trustworthy? No. It was more to mislead and to disinform than to inform. In the Henry Lee Lucas case, few, if any, elements of a serial killer profile apply. Like the FBI, serial killers always act alone. And they're driven to do so by their own private demons. They could not share private passions with others. Lucas, as you know, his accomplice was Otis Toole. He also had other accomplices. Killers, they only target a specific type of victim. Yet again, Lucas, Manson, all these people does not fit. Serial killers follow a modus operandi, following a pattern against the case. How many movies have we seen? We need to figure out this pattern so we can see where he strikes next. So he does this. Again, not the case. And this is about to get insane right here. So if you're checking in just now, perfect, because it's about to get literally crazy. They follow a pattern, and Lucas killed in a variety of ways. But there's so many other things, but this is what's important here. Many serial killers, they have no pattern that they kill, like how they kill somebody. They use weapons of opportunity, meaning like what is ever nearby, like my water bottle, a lamp, whatever is nearby, that's how they kill. Now, who else instructs people to kill like that? Well, in the CIA like handbook, that is how they instruct to kill like assassins. If you're in this type of situation that you need to go unnoticed, you use weapons of opportunity because you're not seen carrying the weapon and you can dispose of the weapon easier as opposed to carrying around, you know, a baseball bat or whatever. Mafia, Luciano Lansky, Mafia Inc., also CIA ran, also the same rules and advice. Don't carry a weapon. Use the weapons around you. Henry Lee Lucas claims his cult also taught him the same things. What are the odds of that? That the cult, the CIA, and the mafia all have the same instructions on how to kill somebody. I guess they're just experts. They all realized that was the best way, right? Because that's what any normal person would think. And it's funny that the FBI tells us that these cults don't exist. They just panic, except they say non-Christian cults do not exist. That's ridiculous. You know what they also said didn't exist? The mafia for decades. They said there is no organized crime in America. Yeah, because you guys were funding and allowing the organized crime to exist. Also important to note, professional assassins carry out their contract with weapons of opportunity and small caliber bullet fired at point blank range, usually a 22 or 25. It's clean, you know, and that's a small for people. I know so little, so I am not an expert, but that's like the smallest, you know, bullet. It's clean, it's quiet, and highly lethal. Now, why is a small one highly lethal? Because it's small enough, if you put to the your noggin, it won't make an exit wound, so it bounces around. And so this will also cause the bullet to be deformed, which will make ballistics super hard to match, if not impossible. So it's weird that serial killers tend to kill with a 22 or a weapon of opportunity, like literally every single time. Every single time. And someone might say, well, what other options are there? Well, there's plenty of options, like a larger weapon, all these things, right? But they kill with weapons of opportunity or a small caliber. Herb Mullen, the craziest and most creative defined serial killer, was his first victim was beaten. Oh, sorry. My Liv Allen is texting me. All right. First victim beaten with a baseball bat for no reason. The next girl was stabbed. The next five victims were killed in a single night at two houses, all drug trafficking families. Each family was armed. And this is crazy. So each family, he killed five victims in a single night after these totally different victims. So no MO, no same weapon, right? Weapons of opportunity. They were armed. There was four people in the one house, all drug traffickers, and they're all four of these people are killed by a lone assailant, and they had a gun, even though he had to reload at least once, possibly twice, to kill all four people. So how is that? You just sit there? You're a drug trafficker and you've never planned to be robbed? That doesn't make sense. What I'm saying is clearly he's not acting alone. It seems like serial killers always like to throw in the murder of at least one drug dealer into their repertoire of victims. And these facts are ignored by the MSM to maintain that like random acts of violence, a perfectly nice family. And I'm sure the families are very nice. I'm not saying they're bad people because they do that, but you understand what I'm saying. In the collectors group, like Gacy, Dahmer, that's where the most consistency is shown among victims, mostly young, gay, bisexual men. Dahmer's was like 14 to 31, varying races, but still not the same, whatever. He's mad at his mom, so he's only attacking women that look like his mom. That whole MO or signature thing, again, we have been propagandized in movies and by the news to make you think like, oh, the psychologists at the FBI, they're figuring these things out. They're identifying the patterns that exist between each one. And I can't tell you how many movies I've seen that do that kind of thing. Like, we need to call in the big guy. You know, stupid stuff. The Boston Strangler, he would kill 19 to 75-year-olds, black, white. Again, just the myth, his name, makes you think this is they're all done the same way. They were, a lot of them were strangled, but not with the same weapon, right? This theme continues. All these people, like the co-ed killer, he didn't just kill co-eds. He old people, his mom. He also liked to use the small to the noggin. And my fiance, who's so lovely, she said, well, because she likes true crime stuff. And she said, well, Bundy picked all girls who looked the same. And though that is correct, some of the women did look the same. But again, these are carefully selected photos by media, police, intelligence, what they release to give you this idea. And it's just amazing how much power this stuff has on our thinking, because if you don't like investigate further, I would never have known this unless I read this book. And so the media is so powerful into creating this thought process that we have. And I know you all know that, but it's just amazing. There are any number of serial killers where it was officially acknowledged that there was more than one perpetrator, all of them. Manson case, early 80s, four-man satanic cult led by Robin Gecht called the Rippers, always includes multiple assailants. They just want you to think that. Boston Strangler, 8 members of the psychiatric panel that tried to develop a profile on him, 7 believed it was 2 perps. And this is all, we're almost there. Lone Nuts, I must have done it if everyone says I did. Richard Speck. Oh, I skipped that chapter. Sorry. All right. So this is, we're going to take a little step away. We're going to go into like these cults, how they started. And this was really interesting. And this is great knowledge for us, for any of you guys, to help you understand. So in 1875, Madame Helena Blavatsky founded the Theosophical Society. It was an occult-based group. And much of the ideology is that of like Hitler's Third Reich. It was very similar. She published Isis Unveiled, The Secret Doctrine. And this influenced modern Satanist and other groups, whether they know it or not. It popularized the notion of a spiritual struggle between various races. Nietzsche, he also posited like this Aryan Superman idea, like Blavatsky. She introduced her followers to the infamous protocols of the elders, you know, and she pushed the importance of runes, symbolism that we see again up in the Nazi party with the swastika and SS. That was her doing. She valued runes. She said there's some power there behind them. And her group started the same year that this guy Abe Lewis died, Eliphas Levy. And he was a French magician, a former priest. He wrote a bunch of occult books. One of his disciples is Albert Pike. Oh, this is a crazy part. Oh my God. It just ties again, the occult with intelligence. How far does it go back? So Albert Pike was a disciple of this, this guy that Blavatsky followed. And this Eliphas Levy, he was the chief of intelligence for the Confederate Army. Albert Pike, the highest ranking Freemason in the United States, was the chief of intelligence for the Confederate Army. Insane, right? He wrote the Constitution for an occult-based secret society. What would that be around that time? The KKK. And he would, which this same set of doctrine would find favor in the Reich, the same belief. 1875 was a very busy year. You had Crowley born, the great beast 666. Also, an asset of the military intelligence, just like Pike, just like Karl Kellner, Franz Hartmann, Theodore Roos, all of German intelligence. And these three guys that I just said, these three Germans were the architects of the OTO. What's the OTO? A secret society formed in Germany around 1895 that claims direct descent from Knights Templar. The OTO directly linked to Blavatsky through Hartmann, who is a theosophist. So these three guys were a follower of theosophy. They started the OTO. The Hermetic Order of the Golden Dawn was created by a theosophist under Blavatsky, William Westcott, in 1888. This is where Crowley joined. In 1898, he gained his occult celebrity status. He creates his own order, the Silver Star, the Astra Magentium. He meets up with OTO German Roos, who appoints Crowley the head of the UK chapter. Same year, penning the manifesto, including the past. He pens the manifesto and includes past grandmasters Richard Wagner and Nietzsche. See, all these groups, and I'm going to keep going because otherwise I'll go forever. In 1919, Crowley said any non-occult member should be treated as a savage. How are with the Masonic symbolism and all this stuff and movies and stuff like that? We are supposed to be treated like a savage, and we are, aren't we? These people, the secret in the know that follow some weird like religion or beliefs, believe we are just like animals. Yes, John, dude, I feel like I've never, John says most secret societies are hybrids of each other. 100%, dude. I'm going to do like a little thing and I'll write it down for anybody who cares about how they break down. But, so thanks for stopping in, John. Awesome, insight. So Crowley, he moves to Sicily in 1920, where he founds Thelema Abbey. Animal sacrifices, bestiality, blood, an infant died there, drug usage, devour human excrement. You get it. Those close to Crowley would often die or end up mad, destitute. He would go mountain climbing with partners. They wouldn't return home, but he was fine. He never, no one, you know, oh, they're weird. They're just doing whatever. One time doing a ritual behind locked doors, the partner did not make it out alive. And Crowley then spent 4 months in a psych ward. He had a daughter die, possibly a son. He dies in 1947 as the head of the OTO. And his thing was, do what thou wilt shall be the whole of the law. And we all know that. But that motto comes out today. Today, what do they encourage you to do? Articles constantly saying, be promiscuous, have lots of sex. People don't, I saw an article, many couples or new couples, married couples aren't living together. It works. They're trying to do all of these things that we have holy. They're flipping them, just like with the excrements of all these things. It's the opposite. A follower who replaced Crowley, Gerald Gardner, he creates an offshoot of the OTO known as Wicca. Early recruits of Gardner was a guy named Alexander Saunders. As a child, he lived with Crowley. He initiated Sharon Tate into witchcraft, and he creates, you know, like their witchcraft. Saunders' counterpart in the USA, who is, so you had a Crowley follower, Gerald Gardner, he creates Wicca. He's has a counterpart in the United States. And who is that counterpart in the United States? Anton LaVey. Yeah, John Crowley was the head, when he died, head of the OTO of the world. And then Parsons, but we're going to, you had Gardner from Crowley, Saunders, and this counterpart that was with Saunders was Anton LaVey. Who's Anton LaVey? The Prince of Satanism. Also important to note, many mainstream medias, Johnny Carson, Life, Cosmopolitan, all speak super highly of LaVey, sending recruits his way to check out this new cool hip thing. That's crazy, right? That's crazy. Why are they doing the liberal? The media is progressive, quote unquote, and progressive is just a code word. It's not actually better, but these institutions that millions of people tuned into, that if you heard the Church of Satan say, like that media gut reaction, they're talking about it in good light, sending people, recruits to LaVey. LaVey was associated with fortune tellers, astrologers, Bugsy Siegel, Meyer Lansky. He studied criminology at the San Francisco Police Department, and they would consult him on nutcases. His daughter claims that his whole backstory was a lie, a fabrication, which makes sense because, like all these people that I listed before, Albert Pike, Aleister Crowley, people that I didn't list, they are intelligence operatives, just like LaVey. Sorry, I was reading the comments. Kurt Anger, who filmed all these occult movies in Hollywood, involved with Manson and all this stuff, they organized this magic circle in San Francisco, which evolved in the Church of Satan in 66. Tons of police, military, intelligence people all joined his group. And then you have Aquino that joins. He leaves, starts the Temple of Set. He joined as he came home from Vietnam. What was going on in Vietnam at this time? The Phoenix Program, the psychological warfare where they were taking Vietnamese prisoners, turning them into like Manchurian candidates, and letting them loose and seeing what happened if they could control them. And that same stuff that he was doing over there, they were practicing here, and now they've got it down to a science. And LaVey comes back after that and comes to America and starts his own cult. I'm sure he was trying to better people's lives. Aquino, he admired the Third Reich for their occult and total control, and he uses the word fascism, and I have got a great quote here, and we'll get to that in a second. Aquino, He says he's the son of an SS officer. Other times he said he was magically created by the Babylon Working. What's the Babylon Working? L. Ron Hubbard and Jack Parsons event in the desert. And we see this again. They push out degeneracy. Look at all this freedom. Meanwhile, taking your actual liberties, giving you more drugs, more filth, more pornography, more debauchery to satisfy us savages, because they know that they're going to take away things that actually will make you feel good, and they'll supplement that with garbage. And it works. It works. It works. And that's all these cults, they practice, you know, debauchery, orgies, all this stuff like that. And what do they promote these days? They promote a wholesome marriage, family, and kids. Bobby Buscelli, who's an associate of Manson, was in the Church of Satan. He linked Manson and LaVey, traces its origins to Crowley, back to the Black Order of Germany. The Black Order was this elite branch of engineering crimes against humanity during the reign of the Third Reich. Here's the quote I wanted to say about fascism that these guys wanted. There is nothing inherently wrong with fascism, but replacing a screwed up, disjointed, stupefying fascism with one that is more sensible and truly progressive. I think that is a brilliant quote that describes what these people liked. They didn't like that the Third Reich was very like conservative, traditionalistic values. No, they loved the control they had, and they wanted to replace those values with the degeneracy we have today. Just like the government that we have in America, it is becoming more authoritarian, fascist, but not in the sense of fascism that was used in World War II. It's this progressive fascism. We're almost done. Last page. So I hope you guys are enjoying it. Let me text Liv Allen. She's at work right now. So, you know, she worries about me. But endorsed the Church of Satan. They endorsed cannibalism, served guests amputated thigh of an unidentified young woman donated by a Berkeley physician. I'm sure that was up to code, right? That's totally normal. So you have LaVey from Crowley. You have Parsons from Crowley, which come from the OTO and the Hermetic Order of the Golden Dawn, which come from Theosophy, which comes from this Elias guy, but basically which comes from Freemasonry, which comes from Knights Templar. And it's all interconnected. Just like Jonathan said in the chat, he said, I think most of these secret societies are like one another. So it comes from the top. Knights Templar above, that's probably like the old secret societies, the, you know, of ancient times. They've carried these traditions down to, let's say, the Templars or whoever, the Gnostics. And so they create these little groups, like little offshoots that take the big things important about it, and they change, you know, whatever maybe they like, but the general basis keeps the same. And that created Wicca, that created the OTO and the Hermetic Order and all these groups. And then that'll create more groups. And now you have like the New Age, and all there's things that change, but all there's some things that stay the same. And the same things that stay the same are things that are not good for your soul, that are degeneracy and debauchery, right? And that's what it is. So all these groups, they stem from that one top, whether that's Freemasonry or Sabbatean Frankism or the mystery schools. They created these offshoots and they all just know each other, and the next like high guy starts his own. Parsons, who we just said, you know, came from Crowley, his right-hand man was L. Ron Hubbard. Hubbard was a suspect of his death. What did Hubbard start? He starts Scientology, OTO, Scientology. Scientology is it's basically built on do as thou wilt. What New Age is built on, do as thou wilt. Do what you want to do. Don't be bogged down with all these responsibilities, man. Live free, dude. In 62 members, Robert Moore, two Scientologists, Marianne McLean, they split off. They formed the Process Church of the Final Judgment, swastika logo, love Satanism, gore. They had a bookstore on organized crime, hypnosis, brainwashing, the occult, all things that are ran by the intelligence apparatus. They came to America in 68,
to San Francisco, not far from the Church of Satan. They were recruiting members. They had recruiters in the streets recruiting these hippies. Signed some famous people. They were located right next to the Manson family and commanded his followers, thou shalt kill. They would also do grave robbing, the same thing Otis Toole, the same thing that Adolfo's Constanzo. All these serial killers do the same stuff. Why? Why? Do they all think the same? No, they don't all think the same. It's because they're being taught something. The Process Church, they changed their name to the Omega, the Best Friends Animal Society, robbing soldiers with Hollywood celebs. Again, we just see these branches, these huge branches that form all these new groups, taking what's socially acceptable or pushing that line, going up to the line, stepping over it. The Process Church spawned Four Pi Cult and a sister group, both that had ties to the Zodiac murders. Manson was involved in drug trafficking, just like Henry Lee Lucas said his cult was. Otis Toole, Henry Lee Lucas' accomplice, paid visits to the New Orleans HQ of the Process Church of the Final Judgment. And this is the last part here. Let me see. What do I want to... I don't want to keep everybody too long. But okay, so the spawn, before we really get next episode, we're going to do all the serial kill, like Manson, Gacy, Ted Bundy, all these people, the Zodiac killings, all these things. Just he was the first one was like shot again, the point blank range. They found military wristwatch, military style heel print around one of the first victims. Roman Polanski, and Paul Tate was Army intelligence asset, a Vietnam veteran. What was an Army intelligence asset doing in Vietnam? The Phoenix program. So I don't have evidence to say this, but one would assume if Paul Tate is in Army intelligence, what is Army intelligence asset doing in Vietnam at this time? Well, they're running the Phoenix program, the mind control program in Vietnam. After his daughters died, Roman Polanski brought his own psychic, the same psychic that was involved in the Boston Strangler case, like also being a psychic there. They organized a black arts festival. Tim Leary, Anton LaVey organized it. A month after the Tate-LaBianca killings, a woman was stabbed in San Francisco. Took an ambulance an hour to respond. The man survived. He said the attacker, this was the Zodiac killings, said the attacker was wearing a logo-bearing costume, a strange hood with an apron, and displayed the trademark of the Zodiac. So that was what this man saw, the guy that killed him. Why is an assassin dressing up in a crazy costume? You're going to identify him right away. This is the last like little part I'll go on. So the Zodiac, you guys remember, he calls into a news station to the Mockingbird Media and has a chat. He calls himself Sam. He's taking credit for all these killings. An anonymous call, gets in right into the newspaper on the TV and takes credit for all these weird murders happening. That's interesting. He's just so smart, I guess, right? Oh, they found on the payphone, a palm print of the guy who made that call. A nervous technician destroyed. He said, oh God, I can't touch it. And destroyed the handprint. I'm sure that was totally random. There's one other part. And then all these killings, basically, this is what, to summarize, six serial killers, Manson, Stanley Baker, Edmund Kemper, Herbert Mullen, John Lindsay Frazier, and the Zodiac, all spawned from Santa Cruz, San Francisco metropolitan area in a span over 4 years, but none, like the murder rates quintupled in the city, highest murder rates in the country. And they all came from the same area. What are the odds of that? What are the odds? Is there something in the water? Why are they all coming from San Francisco area? Yes. John says the feds like to dress up a lot. That they do. They like to play dress up all the time. And there's just one other thing that I wanted to say about that was such a crazy fact. Oh, A day before one of the Zodiac killings, he used a different weapon at each killing, of course. That's important because, you know, the MO that's so in the FBI profile. Some local kids, it was in broad daylight. They saw the murder. They had a description of the guy. They call the police. They say, hey, it's this, you know, guy, white guy, blah, blah, blah. What do the police do that took that call, the dispatcher? They said all units, a black male has just shot. And so it was huge, massive police presence. They were looking for a black guy when the kid said it was a white guy. So clearly, they don't want him caught. They don't want him caught. Why? Because they have deep ties and there's a reason behind this, whether they're involved, complicit, or just an idiot. And I talked about the all these guys spawned from the same area. They use the same symbols in the Tate LaBanca. They did like the Freemason V. They did that with another person that was left in a church. There's just clearly anti-Christian sentiment behind all these murders, drugs, all this stuff. Lastly, the Phoenix program director, William Colby. What does he do when he comes back from Vietnam? Well, he gets appointed as the new director of the CIA, bringing the Phoenix Project home in the States in 1973. And that's where we're going to end the show tonight, guys. So thanks for checking in. I've had a good amount of listeners. John, thanks for the comments. Other people, thanks for the comments. I really love hearing what you guys are saying while I'm doing it. It makes the show so much more fun. Again, I am Jack Allen. I'm not on Twitter. Maybe one day I'll get back on. My IP address is banned, but I'm on Instagram at Conspiracy or JAC. Follow my YouTube, sign up on my website. Maybe I'll change like my Patreon to like a dollar. So if you guys like the show, you can like support the show that way and we could stay in touch. Cause you know, I love doing this, guys. And it's sad that I lost my Twitter account, but thanks for finding me. Follow me on Instagram, follow me on Odyssey and YouTube and Gab. I'm on Gab. So if you're not on Gab, the big thing I wanted to say is they kicked me off for who I was following, not for what I tweeted, because I didn't tweet anything bad, but who I was following. So think of the precedent that they're going to use with that, with who you're following. Misinformation people, you're a little group of misinformationists. Especially the 2022 elections are coming up. You better know that this is just only the beginning. So have backup plans with your social medias, because there's such a great community. We all want to stay in touch. So I'm Jack Allen. Support the show if you can. ConspiracyDressCoincidence.com. My Patreon. Follow me on all these things. Leave a review. And I really enjoyed tonight's show. Next episode, we're going to go over all the inconsistencies of how these were not single-handedly done. And that's it, guys. Thanks for listening. Thanks for supporting me. Thanks for being with me. And we'll talk soon, everybody. Thanks, Stephen. Bye.